From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan, and today we're going to talk about the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's a soundtrack that's had a profound effect 10 years after its release. There's a whole generation of singers and songwriters invigorated by the soundtrack to Oh Brother, and that soundtrack contains music like this, Big Rock Candy Mountain. It's folk music, and it's mountain music from the 1920s and the 1930s. The Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan, wrote much of the music into their script, a tale loosely based on Homer's Odyssey. But I think it was their colleague, T-Bone Burnett, who made this soundtrack such an important part of American culture in the 21st century. And for that 10th anniversary, an entire CD's material is now available that mostly wasn't available before. So, we asked producer T-Bone Burnett to join us and talk about the original score, how it came together, and tell us about the release of this 10th anniversary collection of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I fired up a copy of the song in the jailhouse now here in D.C. as we waited for T-Bone Burnett to take a seat at the microphone at the NPR L.A. Bureau.
Smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They got him in the jailhouse way downtown.
Everybody.
He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now.
You know, all I can say is every time you put this music on, it makes you feel good.
It was a great vibe, I have to say.
Do you remember the linchpin? Was there a song or something that sort of got this whole thing going for you?
Well, there wasn't a song, but the linchpin, I would say, when we were meeting everyone, when the Coens and I went to Nashville and we were meeting everyone, we had a session at Ocean Way, and all the community came in, you know, Emmy Lou Harris and the Nashville Bluegrass Band and Norman Blake, and everybody was coming in to meet the Coen brothers. And we were having a great time playing. And we were all sort of feeling our way around, feeling our way through it. And then Ralph Stanley walked in, and the whole place went dead silent. Huh. And he was looking around, and I said, "Welcome, Dr. Stanley," and he laughed. And then the whole thing, then the ice broke, and then Ralph gave us his blessing. You know, he came in and said, "Yeah," he sang "Oh Death," and said, "I'll do it in the movie." And I think that was the moment when the spirit of the thing began.
Who would imagine a song like "Oh Death" coming into popular culture in the 21st century, really?
Yeah, really, that's right. I mean, it was in popular culture probably in the 18th century or something like that.
Let's just get a little bit of the thread of the story here. You worked on the Big Lebowski. You worked on the Coen brothers asked you to find some music for their film. Is that the sort of beginning of conversations for Oh Brother?
It was, yeah. And we had just finished The Big Lebowski, I think, and when Ethan called up and said, "How would you like to make a movie about the history of American music?"
And, nah, never mind.
Yeah.
I'm busy.
Well, you know, yeah, the complete opposite of that, of course. Yes. You know, but it sort of followed on the heels of the Big Lebowski, which was a tremendous experience in and of itself. And we had a crazy night in New York a couple of nights ago where all the cast reunited, which was a blast, I must say.
The Big Lebowski cast?
Yeah, the Big Lebowski reunion.
It seems to me that any other group of people might have gotten together and said, "Oh, let's make a film about that involves the history of music. We'll use, you know, Homer's Odyssey as sort of the thread." And someone might have picked a bunch of music that... It might have worked okay, but it seems to me that there's a creative spirit that must have happened in conversation and so forth that really made this thing work.
Well, it's true. You know, part of it, I must say, once again, the Big Lebowski was such a... every musician in the world who's on a bus traveling around the country has the Big Lebowski in his DVD player, you know. At the time, I think it was VCRs. Right. So the Coens have a tremendous following among the musicians of this country.
Interesting. Yeah.
And also, you know, going back to their very early stuff, Raising Arizona had a lot of, you know, the Pete Seeger version of Ode to Joy in it, and it had that Charlie Monroe tune of Down in the Willow Garden that Holly Hunter sang as a lullaby, a death ballad sung as a lullaby to her stolen baby. But so there was tremendous goodwill in the music community toward the Coen brothers, and I think that's sort of the beginning of the vibe that happened. I think the people in the country, old time mountain music community, were so thrilled to have to be able to collaborate with these guys whose work we had all loved so much.
Mm-hmm. So now it's 10 years on. About the length of time it took Homer to get back home. Odysseus, yeah. So 10th anniversary collection, there's a whole second disc of music that either didn't make it to the film or maybe was in the film but not on the soundtrack. Let's talk about some of that music. You have something in particular that you are so happy now that is in the limelight again?
Well, Norman Blake did a version of Little Sadie. I've heard Little Sadie a lot of times. Clarence Ashley did probably the first version I heard. But Dylan did it. It's been done a lot of times. But Norman came up with a version of it that no one had ever heard before. And I think it's a really beautiful version of the song. And I was sad that it didn't make it into the movie. So I'm incredibly happy at seeing the light of day now.
Went out last night to make a little round. I met a little Sadie and it blowed her down. Went back home and jumped into bed. 44 smoke plus under my head. Woke up next morning at 9:15. The hacks and the buggies all stand in line. Gents and the gamblers standing around. Taking little Sadie to the burying ground. Well, I got to thinking on the deed I'd done. I grabbed my hat and away I run. Made a good run, but a little too slow. They overtook me in Jericho. I was standing on the corner just reading the bill. Up come the sheriff from Thomasville. Said, young man, ain't your name Brown? Remember the night you blowed Sadie down? Well, I said, yes, sir, my name is Lee.
So for those folks who don't know, Norman Blake made a series of records, I think, for me, at least in the 70s, that were sort of seminal, connecting me to that old-time music. John Hartford was another who was doing that. Is that your connection to some of this music? Was it those musicians in the 70s, or was it actually for you, was it earlier?
Well, for me, it was more, I have to say, the Stanley Brothers. And you know, I was in a band. I worked a lot with Stephen Bruton when I was a kid. And he was in a band actually called the Brazos River Ramblers that did all, you know, Jim and Jesse and Johnny and Jack and the Stanley Brothers and the Monroe Brothers and the Osborne Brothers. You know, so there was a lot of that down in Fort Worth when I was a kid. So I guess it was more I knew more of the late 40s, 50s kind of country music.
The stuff that inspired Hartford and inspired Norman Blake.
Yeah, I
went backwards through it. Any path to it, including the soundtrack, which really, that's sort of the miracle for me of this. The movie was brilliant. Use of music was brilliant. But what happened with the music in our popular culture, I just want to talk about for a little bit, because fairly unpredictable, I think. Everyone says, huge surprise. Did you think so?
Well, I'd always loved this music, you know, and it had been around my whole life. It had been around, you know, Johnny Cash was a big star when I was a kid, and he was doing this stuff at the time. They called it folk music, really, when I was a kid. But I also knew it had gone away, and to a large extent, it wasn't on the charts at all. It wasn't trending, you know. But I knew that we had a George Clooney movie that with a lot of this music in it and these incredible musicians playing these beautiful old songs. And I knew, you know, a movie, the promotion budget for a record is, nowadays it's about probably $250 or something. Promotion budget for a movie is, you know, $20 million or something like that. So I knew we were going to shine a light on it that hadn't been shown on it for decades. So I thought there's a pretty good chance. I thought if somebody hears Ralph Stanley right now singing "Oh Death," it's going to be arresting, you know. Mm-hmm. And it turned out it was. I mean, it was to us when we were doing it, and we're part of the modern popular culture, I guess. So,
yeah, right. You chose in many cases to use artists, folks like Emmy Lou and so forth, artists that were making music today, instead of taking some of the music that maybe you heard as you were growing up, the versions, maybe taking some of the music from the 20s and 30s, why did you choose, in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, to use today's musicians?
That's just the direction the Coens always wanted to go, and I never questioned them on it, but...
So their decision, not yours.
Yeah, it was their decision. I mean, so much of I've gotten a lot of credit for this, but they started the thing and chose a great deal of the material. You know, a lot of the material was written into the script, and they were there for all the sessions. I think the idea was Ethan's idea. When we were recording Man of Constant Sorrow, he was continually trying to get it to be more modern. He wanted it to be a rock and roll song rather than a folk song, you know.
What did you think of that idea?
I thought it was rock and roll initially. I mean, all of this music, there are only two types of music in my view. There's sex music and violence music. There's war music and dance music, mm-hmm. you know. And a lot of rock is martial and war music. You know, it's pounding 4/4 beat, you know. This music was all dance music. It all came from jigs and reels and other community events. So it was initially rock and roll, an early form of rock and roll played with acoustic instruments. So it seemed to me to be completely fitting to make it rock and roll in the 21st century.
Would something like John Hartford's Hogfoot that's on the new collection be an example?
That is the most amazing song. I don't know where Hartford found it, and I don't know why somebody would have written it in the first place. It's the most amazing piece of music, but Chris Sharp is playing guitar on that. He's playing like a walking acoustic guitar, and he never lands. He just completely wanders through the whole song in the most incredible way. So to me, it's sort of like, it's like Ornette Coleman or something. Huh. Hartford had a little bit of Ornette Coleman in him for a country musician. And, you know, he was listening to Ed Haley and those things, studying Ed Haley and going back further.
Tell people who Ed Haley.
Well, Ed Haley made the most well-known recording of Forked Deer, which is one of those one of those killer old tunes. And he was an old-time fiddle player. I mean, he was a fiddle player. He was a rock and roll fiddle player, whom we now call old-time fiddle player. But Hartford was expanding it that way. He wasn't just taking country music as something that was in a bottle. He was living it right now.
Let's listen to some of Hogfoot.
That Hogfoot fur in the bed, fur in the bed, fur in the bed. Put that Hogfoot fur in the bed, can't get you now.
I hadn't heard this. I play in a contra dance band that does Forked Deer. We need to add Hogfoot.
Yeah, you should add Hogfoot. And wait till you hear where it goes. It's about 8 minutes long. Okay. It just goes off into glossolalia, you know.
I'm going to do that. This is on disc two of Oh Brother soundtrack. These are sort of, they're not really outtakes. They're full recordings. They just didn't make it into the... Most of them didn't make it into the film or the soundtrack album of some sort. I want to just talk about the recording of that and the recording philosophy in general. You say the brothers were at the sessions and that was your stock and trade is being a great producer. What was your philosophy when you brought these artists into the studio? Miking, you can go geeky, you can go miking technique. We can talk about just atmosphere, what you told them, did they see film, any of that.
Well, they had only seen, they knew the Coens by reputation, so they, but we didn't see any of the O'Brother film because it was all recorded before we shot.
The music was recorded before you shot the film because they needed the music to make the film? Is that?
That's right, okay. Yeah. We were recording prototypes for the film, and initially, you know, we were going to go in and record everything live on this on the set, you know, film everything live, but it didn't. That didn't work out. As, I mean, some of the stuff was recorded live on the set, but most of the band stuff was laid down in advance, and then maybe the singer would sing live. But you know, the Grave Diggers were live on the set. Chris Thomas King was live on the set, singing "Hard Time Killing Floor Blues." So you know, nobody saw any film, but what we did do. As we decided to, Michael Persante decided to research recording techniques of the 30s. So we set up very much as it would have happened in the 30s. Essentially, everything was recorded with one mic.
Mono or stereo?
Mono. And then we added a deca tree about 10 feet just for the geeky part, you know.
A deca tree? Explain.
Yeah, a deca tree. That was a deca tree. Deca recordings in the 30s pioneered a type of miking to capture the ambience in a room, which is to place three ribbon mics in a triangle about 10 or 15 feet in front of the source. So you got a stereo image with a center image, too, and then you captured all the ambience bouncing around the room. So that's what we used. We didn't use any artificial ambience. We hardly used any artificial thing at all. Just people were standing in front of one, I think it was an old 47 mic. It was probably, I think it was a 47, or it might even been a RCA 44.
These are tube microphones, very warm.
Yeah, yeah, the Neumann 47 is a tube microphone that was designed by the Nazis in the 40s or something to capture conversations from 200 yards away or something. So when you get close to them, they get very excited. and the ribbon, all those old ribbon mics are beautiful from the 30s and 40s. In fact, I mean, they're still the standard today. But, you know, most of it was just recorded with the band standing in a semicircle around that one microphone.
One of the warmest recordings I ever remember hearing stacked against the rock and roll I used to like was a Duke Ellington tune. And on Oh Brother, there wasn't really any jazz. And then on this Outtakes was this song. I'm going to play it, and then we'll come back and just talk about it. Duke, forgive me, I have to fade this down.
I have such a hard time with that.
Yeah, that is such a song.
I can't, once I start listening to a song, I can't turn it off. I have to listen to the very end. That's some kind of obsessive compulsive thing I have.
It's a good thing. I'm sorry I have to do this. But first of all, there was really no jazz, right, in the original soundtrack?
Listen to that recording. That was, you know, going back to the sound of the thing, that's exactly the kind of sound we were trying to find, where you feel like you're right there in the room with the people. I'm listening on headphones right now, and I can hear the bass in front of me over here, I can hear the clarinet over here, I can hear the piano, you know, you can feel the musicians around you, and it's an amazing, you know, and you hear the room, you hear the resonance, you hear the reflections. It's not this cold sine wave coming at you.
And it's the same idea where, okay, I mean, I broke it into a genre here and asked you a question about a genre of music, but really, in its essence, there's not any difference between that song and Ralph Stanley, right?
No, not really. I mean, those musicians, you know, were down in New Orleans and in big cities, and they were following a different muse, but they were doing that. It was part of the same world of, you know, the 1930s in the United States was one of the most amazing periods of music and the history of the world, including all of the modernist classical music that was being done, the incredible blues that was being recorded in the South. And America began to record itself in the 1930s, and we hear the true voices of this country coming to us from those recordings. You know, this is Big Rock Candy Mountain was a song Ethan brought, I think, or Ethan and Joel brought it, but Ethan's the one who brought it to me. And you know, I'd heard that song my whole life, and I'd forgotten it. I'd probably forgotten it three or four times, you know. but bringing it back at this time, the way the Coens did it, the song has tremendous meaning. The lyric is, you know, pre Cole Porter, I would think. You know, there was a time in this country and country music where really the only poetry a lot of the people heard in the country were you know, the King James version of the Bible, the verses in the King James version of the Bible. So there was a lot of sort of biblical poetry in country music. And then this Big Rock Candy Mountain was a switch. It was a country song that got into social commentary and satire the way Cole Porter did.
The version I think I grew up on was probably more Burl Ives, which was cleaned up. You know, the rum or rye or whatever, the whiskey is not flowing as well as the cigarettes aren't growing from the trees.
Yeah. It's lemonade or something, you know. But yeah, the original version is pretty salty, to be sure.
Let's listen to what are we going to hear? We're going to hear Norman Blake. So you want to hear?
Let's hear Van Dyke's instrumental version.
You can sing along in your head. He has such a touch, and if you've ever heard Van Dyke Parks speak, right, it's the exact same thing as his piano playing. He's just got this fluid way of his rhythm. You just want to listen to him forever.
Yeah, he's a true Southern gentleman, Van Dyke.
Such an important song for me and for many was "I'll Fly Away." In the film, there's one version. There's Kasoy, is that how you say them?
Yeah, the Kasoy sisters.
Kasoy sisters, who were sisters, I guess. Were they born sort of in the 50s, maybe?
I guess so. Yeah, they were definitely part of the folk scene. I think Eric Darling produced this track.
And then on the record, you got that amazing Gillian Welch, Alison Krauss version.
Yeah, we that was when we record. We had the Kasoy sisters in the film, and then we were as we were recording these other versions, we brought in Gillian and Allison one day, And I think I was supposed to bring in Emmy Lou and Allison, actually. And I don't know what I did something wrong, as usual. But
I like what you do wrong.
Well, sometimes our mistakes. You know. But at any rate, Gillian had, in the movie, Gillian had just sung a song previously to the I'll Fly Away cue. And anyway, the Kosoy sisters, in the film, there was the innocence of it was profound. And mm-hmm. so we ended up using the Kosoy sisters in the film and put the beautiful Allison and Gillian version on the record. But I'm happy that the Kosoy sisters are finally beginning to get some attention.
So why don't we go out on I'll Fly Away? It's a song that will stick with me for the rest of the day, and that's always good. And just love this version too, Kosoy sisters. Thanks for doing this. The 10 year. Wow. It's amazing. It's really exciting to hear this new music, to think about again how wonderful, important a soundtrack. 9 million copies, something like that, have been sold.
Yeah.
That's just, it's astonishing to me. So well, thank you for being the pioneer for some of these, for such talented people, you yourself being such a talented folk.
Well, my pioneering, you know, is to go out and look for a new land, and I found home, you know.
That's beautifully put. Be well, T-Bone Burnett. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
See you soon.
Producer T-Bone Burnett talking about the soundtrack to the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Its 10th anniversary collection is now available. You can hear full versions of these songs online at npr.org/allsongs. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.